can help. Yeah.
It's nice. Okay. Yeah.
Well, thank you all for coming, particularly when I know there's very few days left like this, beautiful days left like this, before it gets a little chilly in Vermont and New Hampshire. Gosh, I'm like, been in so many places. But anyway, I really appreciate you making it out. I know there's a lot of other things to be doing today, particularly with it being like it is, and it really is an amazing thing to go around the country and see so many people that were energized and took part in, I think, one of the most amazing things that's happened in our country in 20, 30 years in terms of people actually getting involved again and doing something and making a difference. I want to talk a little bit about what I think, why I think this all happened, and probably try to get to a little bit of including why it didn't work or why it didn't went haywire at the end. And then I have to let you ask your questions about things, and then move on from there. But what's going on in American society is a pretty amazing thing, and it's being caused by the internet. And what's going on is we live in a top-down society. Our companies, our political institutions, our government, everything works top-down in this country. It always has. The other thing about that is we're not only a top-down country or top-down institutions, we're also information is power. And that's, everybody's been saying that from the very beginning of this country, you know, information is power. Well, that has some pretty bizarre consequences over time. It is the reason, for instance, why the FBI did not share any of its information with Al-Qaeda, with the CIA. It's because we've got the information. If we hoard that information, we have power and will become the most important security agency in the country, not the CIA. The CIA decides it's not going to share information because sharing means it's giving up power, so it wants to maintain that power, so it doesn't share it. So what do we get? Something that may have been prevented wasn't prevented. The interesting thing about the net is it's the first medium that we've ever had that actually distributes information democratically. In other words, everybody who has access to it has the same shot at getting the information they want or finding information out as anybody else. That creates a huge problem in a top-down information is power society. If information is power and the internet is distributing information democratically, then it's no longer distributing information, it's distributing power. And the problem there is it's distributing power to the bottom. And in a top-down society with top-down institutions, giving power to the bottom wreaks havoc on lots of things. And so the first sign of this was not the Dean campaign. The first sign of this was Napster, which was the top-down recording industry dictating to consumers how it was going to continue to distribute music at exorbitant prices that wasn't any good, deciding which bands made it and which bands didn't make it, when the bottom just said, screw this, we're gonna use the power of the net to totally wreak havoc on a top-down recording industry from the bottom up and change it forever. The recording industry immediately lost 20% of its profits, which continues to happen every month. They lose more and more because of the change that's happened to the downloading of music over the internet. The Dean campaign was the bottom rising up and wreaking havoc on a political system that's busted, rotted, and is not working for the American people. And what the other effect that was going on was when television took control, which it has, I mean, television is everywhere and the most powerful medium that we've had, it relegated the nation's debate to 6-second sound bites, people yelling at each other on cable television and not and having no real debate about war, about the Patriot Act, about any real important issues. those were all pushed off by this medium that doesn't allow any interaction with the American people any way in. So when you look at that, what was going on was in the Dean campaign, we start out, you all know the story, we started out with 432 people and grew to 650,000 because we were willing to do a lot of things differently. The first being that just about every politician out there, including John Kerry and the president, goes up in front of these rooms and stands at the podium, and everything about them in their campaign says, look at me, aren't I amazing? That's what John, when John Kerry's on that Harley or on that kite board or windsurfer thing, what is that about? Look at me, aren't I cool, aren't I amazing? The Dean campaign was the first one, like 30, 40 years, a long time to come along and say, no, look at you, aren't you amazing? And really believe it, really mean it. That, with this, in combination with this new medium, having faith in the American people, that you could actually treat them like adults, treat them as citizens instead of consumers, and empower them any way you could, through any mechanism you could, whether it be meetups or the internet or house parties, but empower them to have a say and take control for themselves, was what our whole, the whole precept of our campaign was about. And it did an amazing thing. I mean, I can't tell you, everywhere I go, just and particularly among young people, it's amazing how many young people who were turned off and thought they couldn't, you know, there was nothing they were going to be able to change, have gotten turned on and are out there working every day in a whole bunch of different ways. The thing, that's the critical thing I think the Dean campaign did. What we did was we took it, the one thing people became convinced of at the broadcast media made everybody sure of was that they couldn't make a difference. Most Americans came to believe over the last 20, 30 years that my $25 contribution or my going door to door in my neighborhood couldn't make a whit's bit of difference against 33 lobbyists for every member of Congress and the hundreds of millions of dollars floating around where both parties chasing huge amounts of money to run negative ads, nuking each other to depress turnout, not to encourage people, to depress the other guy's voters so they don't come out. And that we were in this cycle of just destroying our democracy because of the way the system's gotten busted up. What we did was, became a day when it was, I can tell you exactly when it happened. We had 99,000 supporters, and we emailed them and we said, close your eyes and do whatever you can, whether it's $5, $10, $25, close whatever you can. Do whatever you can, close your eyes and do it. Because if every single one of us does it, you're right, one of us doing $25 isn't going to make a difference. If we all do it, it's going to turn politics upside down. And that week, we got to $7.6 million. And the most amazing thing was that 50,000 people actually did it. 50,000 folks actually closed their eyes and did it. The most amazing thing was what happened next, because we got all these email and comments on the blog, and the 50,000 people who did it were like, we can make a difference. I knew we could. And look at ABC and CBS and the New York Times and the Washington Post and the LA Times all saying, this Dean campaign's turned politics upside down. People are getting involved in it. That's amazing. The more amazing thing was the 49,000 people who didn't do it. Because what we got were all these comments saying, damn it, I knew I should have done this. You know, and the next time you do this, I'm going to do it because we can do this. So every quarter, we would wake up, there'd be a whole new cadre of people kind of like half wanting to but not quite believing that would get it. You know, and that's why we kept having that exponential thing that happened. The governor... Look, this guy showed, I think, tremendous courage. I mean, we were out there when the war was... I mean, I watched Schwarzenegger talk about how Bush showed amazing courage with so many Americans being against the war, but he just did it because...
I'm like,
are you kidding me? It was 80-20 for it. And, you know, Howard Dean didn't look at any poll. He didn't care. 80-20, it was wrong, and he was going to say so. And it woke up the entire party that it was time to take these guys on and tell and say what was wrong and mean it and show some conviction. And I think we woke up the party. I think we energized it, which is another thing that happened. But I do want to make clear what really happened at the end, because and then I'll open it up to questions. What happened at the end is really simple and complicated at the same time. But first of all, you have to start with the fact that in the first quarter of 2003, John Kerry has $10 million and Howard Dean has $100,000. I mean, just start there for a second. The Kerry campaign at that moment was buying the finest stainless steel axles that you could buy for their brand new race car that they were going to build to help rip around the track of presidential politics. In the Dean campaign, I was sending kids out to collect aluminum cans on the side of the road so that we could melt them down and through a lot of ingenuity craft aluminum axles, knowing full well that when aluminum gets hot, it melts real fast. And like all that friction inside the axle, that's not a good thing to build an axle out of, but that's all we had was aluminum cans, so we do that. And we use rubber bands for the fan belt while they're buying, you know, a chain belt. And at the same time, Kerry is hiring the best pit crew in American politics. I mean, he's waving big money to the pros and saying, and the New York Times saying he's going to be the nominee. And so you've got the best pit crew boss in America, and they're offering him tons of money, or her tons of money, and we're saying, could you come to Burlington and work for free? Because it's going to be really great. It's going to be amazing. And, you know, these guys are pros, and they're like, no, I'm going to go with a winner, and they're offering the money, so they win. In the Dean campaign, I've got 22-year-old kids running through the door, on fire, energy, idealistic, and they're screaming at me, put me in, coach. I'm going to change the analogy now to baseball for a second on you, and I'm looking at the guy and I'm going like, just answer one question for me, have you ever played shortstop before? And he goes, no, but I got a glove. And you know, it's a first baseman's mitt, you know, and you're like, okay, look, what I need you to do is I want you to stand between second and third base and just stop the ball. If the ball comes to you, just make sure it hits your head, your body, the glove, whatever. Just make sure it's in front of you. Keep the ball in front of you and just stop it. And don't throw it anywhere. Look over at me and I'll be pointing at where you should throw the ball. So that's the second thing. So you got this amazingly ingenious car that's being built with scrap parts. And you've got it all being done by people who've never... We had 22-year-old kids who were running a quarter of the country who... It's not that they never worked in a presidential campaign before. They've never worked in a campaign before. And then you have the third ingredient, Howard Dean, who is a rookie race car driver. A very talented race car driver, but a rookie. He becomes governor when Governor Snelling dies of a heart attack. Not your toughest race. You know, he puts his hand on a Bible and raises his hand. Then, to his credit, because he actually is an amazing governor, he really does provide health care for 97% of his kids, 91% of adults. He really does balance the budget 12 years in a row, lowers the income tax twice, raises the minimum wage to $7, get drug prescription benefits for seniors in his state. That he really did all that stuff. Well, there's a byproduct of that. The byproduct is the Republicans can't get Bozo the Clown to run against him for re-election. Mm-hmm. So he goes out there every time for re-election, and there's a guy with really pointy orange hair, white clown face, and a big orange nose, and red balls and nose, and you just say to the governor, it's really tough giving him advice. Governor, if you go to the debate and just don't reach over and honk the clown's nose, I think you're going to win this election. So Governor Dean has, I'm telling you, this is the truth. There are freshman members of Congress who had one more tough race under their belt than Howard Dean did, and his first tough contest president race is not Kerry versus Weld. It's not Dick Gephardt running for president in 1988, so now he's got that experience. Joe Lieberman running for vice president in 2000, so he has that experience. No, this is going to be it. Every rookie mistake that a guy running for Congress in this Huff race is going to make, Howard Dean's going to make it through no fault of his own. So the miracle of this whole thing is not that the Boston Red Sox somehow came back in the bottom of the ninth to beat the New York Yankees. That's not what happened here. Okay, what happened is the Vermont Little League Bad News Bears went to Fenway Park. The rest of the other campaigns in the Democratic establishment thought and expected us to go to the ticket counter, buy nosebleed section seats, go up there, make a hell of a lot of noise, and watch and learn how to play politics from the pros who are out there on the field. The St. Louis Cardinals and the Boston Red Sox and all those guys. What happened, two things happened. The first thing is, we figured a way to sneak past security and get out on the field. These little leaguers, we get out there on the field. And then the next thing that happened was 650,000 Americans figured out a way to sneak out on the field with us. So the ball went through the shortstop's legs. All of a sudden, one of you went running by, grabbed the ball, and we pointed you through it. And that's really what happened. The miracle wasn't that the Boston Red Sox came back in the bottom of the ninth to do this. The miracle was, how the hell did the Vermont Little League Bad News Bears get on the field and in the first inning, from the first inning on, start teaching the pros how to play ball, how to do it differently, how to get this many people out there with them, and how to and took a lead all the way to the top of the ninth. Right? And then, yeah, the Red Sox came back and beat us in the bottom of the ninth. That's the way politics works. And at the end, I made mistakes, the governor made mistakes, but the legacy of this campaign and what the book is really about is not, it is about the campaign and that roller coaster ride, but I think it's a lot more than that. It's what the future now means, how we really can build a common community that goes out and does what citizens should do, which is work for the common good, not just our own self-interest, which is what the Dean campaign really was about. And I really think, you know, obviously everybody's out there doing whatever they can between now and November 2nd, but it ain't over November 2nd, even if John Kerry wins. There's a reason we don't have health care, and that's because, not because Howard Dean didn't have a good plan, or Dick Gephardt didn't have a good plan, or Clinton didn't have a good plan, or Harry Truman didn't have a good plan. It's because you put a plan up and 33 lobbyists come out of the woodwork and Harry and Louise get millions of dollars behind them, scaring the American people about how they're not going to, you know, it's going to be socialist medicine, they're not going to have a doctor, all that kind of stuff. So the only way we're going to get real change is to keep doing it after November, to keep building this community that's for out there working for the common good and is going to overpower this broadcast media that's been going on in our country for years. And the other reason we failed or it didn't quite work is, let me tell you where we're really at, and then I'll, you know, end this thing and answer questions. There was a similar moment when radio was king and television was a new medium that the visionaries were all saying was going to change everything dramatically, but we were just coming off FDR's fireside chats as a nation. Radio was everything. And the moment came in 1952. A guy named Richard Nixon was caught with his hands in the cookie jar, bags of unmarked bills, jewelry, gifts for his wife, and all kinds of gifts from lobbyists. And I was thinking of throwing him off the ticket. The rumor circulated that Eisenhower wanted to throw Dick Nixon off the ticket. And Nixon went to Ike and said, there's this new thing called television. I want to look in that camera and talk to the American people directly. And if after you see that, you want to off me, I understand, but give me my shot. So like, Richard Nixon goes on national television and says, I want to talk to you about these gifts I've been getting from lobbyists. We got one, just one I want to talk about, this crate. Got shipped all the way from a lobbyist to Texas. And it came to the house, and we were curious. We wanted to look inside to see what it was. And there was this puppy, black and white and spotted. Trish and me looked at the puppy and named it Checker. And well, the girls just loved the dog. And, you know, I don't care what the press says about that lobbyist or about that puppy. We're not giving him back. And like, in an instant, bullshit had its new meaning. And that's what we've been living with under that medium for all this time. And in 1952, we were at the very beginning of television. Who would have predicted that it would have been what was three black and white stations would become 500 satellite-delivered, on-demand television, TiVos that you could record your own stuff, and how it had totally taken over our nation. I mean, the politics became, in a very short time, by 1963, only about, or 68, around in there, solely about chasing big money to buy TV ads, to nuke each other, and what got left in the whole process over 30, 40 years was the people. And what the net is doing and what the Dean campaign did was simply put back in politics, which should have been there all along, us. And the book is about the campaign, but also about all that and how, where we take this to the next step to be there and continue to build this, because otherwise, I guarantee it wouldn't have mattered. If Howard Dean had gotten elected and we'd all stopped, Howard Dean's health care plan would not have been passed. It would have been demonized and wrecked. It's going to take, no one's going to change, no one's going to change America for us. No knight in shining armor is going to ride in there on a white horse. You have to do it. We all have to do it. And that's sort of what the book's really about and how we can do that. So with that, I really appreciate you coming. Happy to answer questions for a bit, and then anybody wants me to sign their book, I'll be happy to do that. Yes.